item 8 from Tim. And is Varys staying on the line for these for this presentation?
Ian will drop off, but Scott's going to stay on.
Okay.
Thank you,
well,
William,
Ian. Thank you so much. No, thank you very much. This was very informative and much needed in this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Ian.
Always a pleasure. I look forward to seeing you all face-to-face sometime in the foreseeable future.
Sounds good. Be safe, please.
Bye-bye.
Okay, Tim. Bye now. Item 8, Chief Investment Officer, update on investment response to COVID-19.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I just want to say thank you to the team at Varys for jumping on here. I know there's a lot of demands on their time right now, and it's somewhat difficult to present you know, over the phone, but I think it's important to remind ourselves of the actions we've taken in past years and how that's being manifested in the portfolio today, and really what the toolkit is that allows us to respond to a shock to the system that, you know, came out of left field, as most shocks do. You don't necessarily see what's coming or how it's going to be manifested, and you want to provide an asset allocation and diversification that really kind of covers your bases and gives you a lot of flexibility. You have a memo for me in the packet. I think Ian did a good job of addressing the fiscal response and the monetary response to the COVID-19 outbreak and the resultant social distancing. I really want to focus my comments on the interaction of the three sub-portfolios in the FFP structure and what we're doing in terms of rebalancing and what might lie on the horizon here. So just to give the board a preview of what the conversations might look like as the situation unfolds domestically and within the Cicera portfolio. So just a reminder for everybody on the phone, the FFP structure really looks at what are the core functions of the investment program and centers portfolios around meeting the needs of those different functions. And we divide that into paying benefits today, paying retirees who are currently receiving checks from us and making sure there's a lot of certainty around where those individual cash flows come from every month. And then setting aside the remainder of the portfolio to capture long-term economic growth, both in the debt and equity markets, as well as a smaller risk-diversifying portfolio that's really intended to provide flexibility to rebalance into growth during periods of dislocation in the financial markets, such as what we're seeing today. So maybe I'll just comment on how each one of those portfolios is functioning. You know, we don't have the first quarter performance figures yet. Those will be forthcoming in the next month or so. So I'm gonna focus on operationally what we're seeing, and we can certainly assess the performance at a future date. But the liquidity portfolio, it really is the core of what we do. It's invested in short duration government and corporate securities, all domestically oriented and all dollar denominated. So Scott touched on, you know, even that market place is seeing a little bit of stress, but I think one of the things that the Federal Reserve has done is start to buy investment grade securities, and that's really provided support for that marketplace. So even where we saw some initial stress, we saw less of it in our three portfolios that make up the liquidity portfolio. We have not had any issues with bonds maturing on schedule. We haven't had any issues with defaults in that portfolio. It's by design intended to be you know, highly safe assets, a high degree of certainty around where each individual cash flow comes from. We've been in this period of stress in the credit and equity markets for going on 6 weeks now. So the February payments came through from the liquidity portfolio with no issues. The March payments came through with no issues. We have already scheduled out transfers out of the liquidity program and into our local bank to pay our benefits to retirees through June. So we've got a lot of certainty around where our near-term needs, near-term cash flow needs are coming from there. So that really leaves the long-term growth portfolio and the risk-diversifying portfolios. And you can imagine that's where a lot of our focus, almost all of our focus, has been as a team. So the investment team, the five of us have been working remotely Since we started testing our remote working capabilities even the week before the stay-at-home order came through, making sure we had connectivity to every manager, to our consultants, to our vendors, to our databases, making sure we could test our ability to meet all capital calls, to schedule cash flows. And I want to comment that my team has done an incredible job of, you know, both maintaining operational capabilities while working from home, but maintaining the ability to kind of continue the main jobs of, you know, overseeing the managers and doing research on new strategies and that sort of thing. So we've been working well there. But within the growth portfolio is really designed to accept the equity risk premium and accept the short-term volatility that comes along with capturing long-term economic growth. And it's the liquidity program safety that allows us to accept the risk in the growth portfolio. So when we're looking at equity returns of, you know, down 20%, it's going to be manifested there, but we have the flexibility to accept that risk there in return for the long-term returns. So much of our activity to date has been focused on rebalancing into the growth portfolio from the risk diversifying portfolio. We have raised cash from the risk diversifying portfolio. We intend to continue doing that in the future, in the coming months, and slowly and methodically continue to rebalance back to stay within our long-term targets of 60 to 80% in the growth portfolio. Let me pause there before I talk about some of the specific actions and just see if there's any questions from the trustees. So maybe just a little bit of a recap of kind of how we've approached the portfolio over the past 2 months now, and it feels like several years, but it's only been 2 months. The first thing we did kind of leading into this period was in, I guess it was the middle to late February, we started doing a liquidity reassessment. We thought we had a pretty good handle on what cash on hand we had, what sources of cash, what was liquid enough to be sold, to be reallocated, but we did a full reassessment of our cash positions and make sure we had everything protected that we needed to have protected for near-term capital calls and rebalancing activity. We identified several hundred million dollars in liquid assets that could be redeployed and additional close to $1 billion that could be rebalanced over the next several months here. We stepped up communication with all of our asset managers, both checking on them, checking on the portfolios. We wanted to see if we could identify any trends, as the risks popped up in different segments, we wanted to understand where we might have impairments, where we might have some opportunities. And I think, you know, you can appreciate that in a fast-moving news cycle, it's only with the constant communication that all five of us have been having with our roster of managers and consultants that we've been able to, you know, make sure that what we think is in place is in place. And if we need to make any adjustments, we've made those adjustments. Like I mentioned, we have begun to draw down the risk diversifying allocation in order to rebalance it both into debt and equity, public and private, within the growth category. And that's really initially focused on maintaining our lower bound of 60%. We entered this period with about 68% allocated to growth, and, you know, with the equity market drawdowns, so we've been focused on make sure we're staying within that lower bound. It's a little bit of an iterative process as we get clarity on one segment or another. So we've been doing a lot of mid-month updates and assessments, really, in that space. I think it's important to note that given that we've had the structure in place, you know, the board made a decision in 2015 to move to the structure. It was really built out in 2016, and so 2017 was our first year that we have fully operational. And our rebalancing has been such that we've taken about $879 million out of the growth category over the 2017, 18, 19 rebalancing cycles. And we've methodically harvested those gains that we put into lower volatility assets. Now we're starting to see a reversal of that trend, so the rebalancing, which is just the relatively straightforward implementation of board policy continues to work for us. We harvest gains in good times. We rebalance in stress periods to capture future gains. And one of the things, and against this backdrop, we've both been maintaining our underwriting of a number of strategies that we've been looking at going into this crisis period. We're starting to see a couple of new interesting strategies that we're assessing whether or not we want to allocate into them. I think I would echo Ian's comments that we don't need to be acting hastily here. We can take the time to methodically understand what the opportunity set looks like, who the right partners are, what the right economic structures are, but I do anticipate some increased manager allocation activity in the second half of the year as we get some clarity around the public health response, the resulting impact on global trade, the resulting impact on global institutions, and make some reassessments going forward there. But I think it's important to note that that ongoing work of monitoring, assessing, stress testing the portfolio is continuing apace. The thing I would mention for the what's on the horizon is within our investment policy statement, we divided rebalancing into zone one rebalancing and zone two rebalancing. Zone one rebalancing is really what staff does within the bounds set by the board. And I talked about the 60 to 80% allocation range for the growth portfolio. That's really what's being put upon staff just to stay within those guardrails. There is a zone two rebalancing, and that's something the board might want to consider in the future. It's not a conversation today. It's a conversation that will likely come up somewhere down the road here that we can reallocate up to a year's worth of the liquidity portfolio to free it up to invest in growth assets. So we go from a 3 to 4 year range in liquidity portfolio to a 2 to 3 year range. And because that is a change to the long-term positioning, within the FFP structure, that is a board discussion, but I think it's something to keep in mind as the situation evolves. If we get to the point where we want to, be a stronger liquidity provider to the equity marketplace, there is an option for the board to take a more aggressive posture, and that's something that might a discussion that might come up at a future board meeting. So let me wrap my comments there and just say, I think we have clearly been working much harder than we have in quite some time here. I think it's difficult to rise to the challenge of working on smaller screens and away from our away from our office and the ease of communication we have as a team. But my team is doing daily meetings. We're getting that interaction with the asset managers. We're getting that interaction with the consultants. We're obviously challenging all of our assumptions of how we thought things were going to work going in here and making sure that we're not taking anything for granted. But I've been pleased with how things have gone so far. And I think I just want to make sure that the U.S. trustees understand that your policies that have been laid out in statements over the years have been implemented and will continue to be implemented by the Cicero investment staff and others. So let me pause there and see if there's any questions.
Thank you, Tim. Any questions?
Sure. Todd, this is Scott. First of all, Tim, I just wanted to say publicly thank you. Great report. And I just do feel very strongly that we have a very steady hand at the rudder, and so the thoughtfulness, the work, the insight is all recognized and greatly appreciated. I know by all. On the point you made at the latter part of your report, it's my translation, my sort of lay translation is you'd like us to be able to be more nimble in the rebalancing game with respect to what has been a very conservative liquidity portfolio approach so that we can take advantage of dislocation and be able to have that advantage, the growth portfolio. Is that a fair summary, or is that oversimplifying it?
No, that's a fair summary. This is something that was put into the policy statement years ago to say, if we have a significant equity market dislocation, might the board want additional flexibility? And so it was put into the policy statement to provide that additional flexibility. I would say that, you know, I don't believe that we're at a point yet where it makes sense to have that conversation, but I just want the board to be aware that that's something that may come up here in the future as we get greater clarity on how a public health recovery was going to play out and how that's going to translate into an economic recovery. That additional ability to rebalance a portion of the liquidity program is in the toolkit as well.
Yeah, I guess my reaction to it is I like the thought, but I, like Candace, have taken great solace in the current FFP structure where we have that confidence, knowing that despite this incredible turbulence that really couldn't be anticipated, we know we're in great shape and we're meeting our obligations, which is fundamentally the primary objective, you know, to get the checks out. And to maintain the health of the fund. So I like the idea of the opportunity to rebalance more aggressively and take advantage of some, you know, that dislocation. But you know, it's one of those things where you're in essence borrowing a little bit from the safety of the current structure. But my lean is that I like the idea of it, because what we have is, in my view, conservative. But at a time like this, the best place to be is conservative. So anyway, I just wanted to give you some of the feedback.
Understood.
Thank you, Scott. Is there any other questions or comments?
I was going to draw, I know I do this all the time, I'll try and make it a short one. This is Jerry. A short analogy. Many years ago, I was involved in helping to put a building up together in San Francisco. And one of the last minute changes we made was to have a architecture firm come down from Seattle, coincidentally, to see if they had some additional input on the earthquake preparedness for that particular building. Anyhow, and about 6 months later, the 1989 earthquake came. And about 5 hours after that, the architecture firm got on a plane from Seattle to come back and see how the thing had worked. And they found it in remarkably good shape. And I think there was a combination of satisfaction and maybe a little surprise that it had gone through such a stress test. And I draw the parallel here. I think when you put something like this together, I didn't understand all the ramifications. I don't think I got a good idea of what it was going to be, but not a perfect idea. I don't think anyone anticipates a stress test like this, and there's no way to really kind of practice and see whether or not that stress test is going to work. And this has so far been a hell of a stress test, and it seems to have worked out really well, and I'm pleased with what the board did in the way of a decision, and pleased, of course, that we got the recommendation to do so. So congratulations.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you, Jerry.
Tim, it's John. I have forgotten the name of the manager. It was one of our more esoteric ones. I think we invested in it. It was a investment in arbitrage oil, gas, entities in basically the Permian Basin. Probably goes back 4, 5, 6 years at this point. As I continue to read about the disaster taking place in oil and gas, am I recalling this correctly? Do we still own the investment? And what are your concerns at this point?
I believe you're referring to Angela Gordon's Energy Credit Opportunities Fund, which is largely wrapped up, if not completely wrapped up. I'd have to double check to see if we've received the final cash flows. We do have other investments in natural resources, That was part of our inflation hedging category going back many years now. That's since been subsumed into the private equity portfolio. We certainly have some exposure to the oil and gas segment, and I think, you know, it's largely in the private side of the equation. I know Rishi Gibran on our team has been in dialogue with those managers. Clearly, there's some assets there that are, you know, they're still operational, but they're very clearly stressed. The price of oil and the global demand for energy really drive those. So there are going to be some portfolio companies that go somewhat dormant for a period of time. I don't have great clarity on the final impact to those portfolios. I know that's an ongoing conversation to date and will continue for the next several months, I'm sure. But I think when it comes to the private side of the portfolio, the private equity, the private credit, we're really focused on where do we have significant under or overweights to segments of the economy that might be more sensitive to you know, the shutdowns associated with COVID-19. And there's been, you know, very heavy dialogue on what are we doing to protect these positions, to help the companies manage through these positions. And that this is going to be a conversation that just is going to unfold over months, not weeks. So I would imagine there will be further updates to the board about what's going on in that portfolio in, you know, the May and June timeframe.
Okay. I'd add to COVID-19 in oil and gas, of course, what's happening between Russia and Saudi Arabia and just the incredible reduction in the value of oil.
Yeah. It's one of the interesting aspects of this. In any other market environment, the price of oil would be the only thing we'd be talking about. But in this market environment, it's almost forgotten. There's a lot going on. And I think that's one of the takeaways here is when you're facing a very, very large and significant crisis, there's going to be a lot of smaller crises that still need your time and attention. This is why we're in constant dialogue with these managers of saying, what's going on big picture-wise in response to COVID-19? What else is going on? What are the second-order effects? What's getting hidden from the, you know, what's missing from the headlines but still significant to the portfolio? And we're doing a lot of digging in that space. And we will continue to. The oil story is probably the biggest second-order effect that we're seeing right now. But I think the use of leverage in a couple of the portfolios, and particularly the more widespread use of leverage in the financial market in the past couple of years, is going to become a bigger and bigger story here in the second quarter.
Thanks, Jim. Any other questions, comments?
Just a quick one. This is Jay. For Tim, really, I wanted to echo the earlier comments on being open to further rebalancing, whether it's Zone 2 or otherwise. And I think, maintaining the liquidity that everybody's being reassured by, it came at a certain cost. And so the implied payoff for that, right, is the pickup you get when you rebalance using that, perhaps using that buffer. So I just wanted to kind of second the comments on being open to further rebalancing. And then just a quick question about drawing down the risk diversifying portfolio in order to rebalance into growth. It makes complete sense in terms of the larger plan, but I wonder as long as that rebalancing continues and maybe further rebalancing goes on, the types of risks in the portfolio become very kind of growth-centric. Is there some thought to kind of changing the nature of what remains in the risk diversifying portfolio to maybe be a little bit not necessarily tail hedging specifically, but a little bit more offsetting to what's you know the kind of dominating nature of the growth risks?
I think what we've been focused on right now is within the rebalancing, what types of portfolios do we want to focus on initially? And rather than buying the broad market, our focus has been on where can we invest that's going to have an equity upside that could potentially participate in an equity rebound. But the companies that we're investing in, I have the stronger balance sheets, are probably less capital intensive, have a, I think the more robust growth oriented companies that have large franchises, have brand names, has been our area of focus there. So Jay, to your point, have we considered a tail risk hedge? No, we have not. They are extraordinarily expensive right now. As you know, the cheapest time to put a tail risk hedge on is when equities are at a market peak, not now. But I think what we have focused on here is saying we don't want to overweight companies that might be more stressed for longer, smaller companies, more heavily indebted companies, companies that did not have a robust cash flow or, are losing some of their robust cash flow. That's areas that we're underweighting at this point.
Great, thanks.
Okay, any further questions for Jim?
Hey, Tim, this is Mike. Just one thing, again, thank you for the work that you and your staff are doing. And of course, the most important thing to retirees and speaking as one is seeing that check in the mailbox every month. But I just want to let you know, as head of one of the organizations, the retirees, we have over 1,800 members. And I can tell you that we have not gotten one single person gotten hold of me and asked, what did I think? Is there going to be a problem getting that check? Everybody has confidence in your organization and in you and the job you're doing. So from all of them, I thank you.
Thank you for that comment. I mean, getting the checks out involves the entire organization. So we make sure there's money available, but there's an entire team getting the payments processed and the checks out. So that's in the effort of the entire organization.
Any further?
This is Jerry. I only note one other comment that I might make. We have to introduce Mike to direct deposit because he's apparently still running to his mailbox looking for the checks. So Dale will give you
an exercise.
On that, Mike.
any other questions of Jim? Okay, hearing none. Jim, thank you so much to both you and your staff. This was very informative. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.